Good morning. It's 8:13. Stay with us for the local news hour coming up in just a minute. Our first guest will be Summit County Clubhouse staff member Phyllis Sharples, and she'll be on the line to talk with us about things going on with the Summit County Clubhouse. This is the KPCW Local News Hour, and our first guest this morning is Phyllis Sharples with the Summit County Clubhouse. Good morning, Phyllis. Can you hear me?
Good morning. I am so glad to be here.
Well, thank you for joining us. And yes, so why don't you give us a little bit of an update about the clubhouse and what your what your organization does. And it sounds like there have been some changes in your location recently.
Right. Thank you, Carol. It is Carolyn, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, hi. Right. So for those of you who don't know, the Summit County Clubhouse is a clubhouse for people, for adults living with mental illness. And by mental illness, we're talking about schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, those kinds of diagnoses. And we came to Summit County almost a year ago, actually, in August. We're going to have a big, hopefully, have a big celebration in August to celebrate our first year. So we're brand, we're really new, and hopefully growing. We are growing. But we recently moved. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Hello? I'm sorry. We recently moved to a location in Jeremy Ranch, which we love. We're making it our home, and we're open 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And it's a working clubhouse, which means that the members of the clubhouse do all the work of the club, which is exactly what it's for. It's to just help people that have been, oh, I don't know, stigmatized or felt like they, their skills and their, what they have to offer has kind of been put on hold a little bit during their mental illness. They come to the clubhouse and they find it again. It's part, it, they become a new person almost. They recognize who they really are and are able to enhance their skills, maybe go to work. We help them find housing, the socialization, getting out of their, maybe their homes or their heads, in order to be a part of a really caring and safe environment where they can really be around like-minded people who understand and appreciate who they are as people.
Okay, sure. So how many members do you have now?
We have 13 members, and they come and go as they please. It's their clubhouse, so there's no forced time when they come. It's the doors are open to them whenever they want to come. So we have some that come every day. We have some that come once a week or just check in occasionally when they need a little extra support. Yeah, so it's very fluid, and it's just such a magical place.
Okay, and so you've moved recently to Jeremy Ranch. You used to be with the Park City Christian Center in that location?
Yes, and we were really grateful for their assistance in getting us started. But we had one little tiny room, and so now we have a really great place in Jeremy Ranch, and we're very, very grateful for that, too, because we've made it our own home. But exciting news is that we possibly are going to be able to actually purchase a place for ourselves. We're growing, and we're hopefully going to be able to purchase. We have a benefactor who's kind of told us that he would help us with a forever home, and we're looking forward to that, hopefully in the near future.
Okay, and your clubhouse serves Summit and Wasatch County, is that right?
Right. We have, we're trying to work out a really strong agreement with Wasatch County. There is a clubhouse in Provo, but it's shorter for them to come here. We have, you know, we're working out transportation issues. We were gifted by Park City Transportation a bus we fondly call Big Bertha. And, you know, it's kind of an older bus, and we love it. And so we're hopefully going to be able to get it really running well so that we can maybe do some more transportation to Colville, to possibly Camas and Heber. So, yeah, that's kind of hopefully really soon. We're working on that, too.
Now, would you have volunteers drive that vehicle in order to accommodate getting people to and from the clubhouse?
You know, that's a great idea. Right now, Amber, the executive director, and I do the transportation, but yeah, I would love to have volunteers do things like that. That would free our time up a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So where are you located in Jeremy Ranch?
It's just off Rasmussen Road it's 3070 Rasmussen Road, you know where the Jeremy store is?
Okay.
Right there, just off the freeway where they're doing all that construction on the roundabout. And they are putting a bus stop in, which will be within walking distance of the clubhouse right now. So really glad about that. So it's just Suite 170 and 3070 Rasmussen Road.
Okay. And talk a little bit about the COVID-19 impacts. How are you taking precautions during
Thank
this time
much.
When we're so concerned about transmission of this illness?
No, man, that's been hard. Well, we closed our doors for a while, and then we reopened on May 11th when we were given the green light. Because we're small, we were able to go in and mark X's on the floor for where the chairs need to be, and we have masks for everyone. The Rotary made these really great shields, kind of like shields, because we do have a hearing impaired member. So she needs to be able to see our lips. So they're clear and they go down over our face, and that's been really good. But we sanitize and, we social distance. We're very careful. We have a working kitchen. So we take extra care to make sure everything is sanitized and healthy and good. That's great. Yeah. So we are doing those things. Hopefully that's not going to, stop people from coming. I think maybe it has a little bit, but we respect everyone's decisions.
Okay. And so all the people who attend and participate there at the clubhouse are also wearing masks then?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's interesting to see when people have come to visit, they're very careful too. We definitely social distance as well as wear masks inside. We're always wearing masks.
Okay. And what can people do if they want to get involved and be a part of the clubhouse? How do they reach out to you and get involved?
Thank you. We have our website. We'd love for you to go to Summit County Clubhouse, info@summitcountyclubhouse.org. And there are many opportunities. You can, see at everything that there is that they could offer. Right now, what we need most is, of course, financial assistance. COVID hit us hard in the Medicaid revenue. We are a Medicaid provider, so we are able to bill Medicaid. But when we don't have members coming in, of course, we can't bill Medicaid. So we've lost revenue due to that. So that's probably the biggest need right now is financial. And, of course, since we are new, we are always looking for good office supplies and kitchen supplies and things like that, and volunteers. We have a great education area. And hopefully we'll need that as we grow. And so that people that are, maybe their illness prevented them from getting their high school diploma or furthering their education as they would wish. So we're always looking for tutors to help our members, even simple things like computer skills and typing skills and those kinds of things. It's really been fun to see as our members come into the house to work on computers and realize that they can do these things that they didn't think they could. For whatever reason, didn't get those skills really down, and now they're able to do it as they do financials for the clubhouse or as they work on any of our computer projects or any of our house projects. So, tutors, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you'd mentioned earlier that there's a benefactor that has considered finding a permanent home. Where is that being considered? Is it here in Summit County?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We like to be close to a bus stop, and we're looking at a location that is close to a bus stop and not far off of, the main roads between Heber and Park City. So, I hope soon I can call in and tell you exactly where it is and that it all worked out and that the neighbors love us. And that's one of our fears is that, you've heard the expression NIMBY, not in my backyard. That's always an issue with people who don't understand what it means to have a mental illness. And boy, the stigma, we want to just bust that stigma so that people understand just because you have a mental illness does not mean anything bad, except for the person who has the illness. It's a hard struggle. But, so that's a battle. Hopefully we won't have to fight, but we're prepared if we do.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to say, Phyllis?
Well, I would just really encourage anyone who is living with a mental illness or has a friend or a son or a daughter or a husband or a wife, anyone that's living with mental illness, just come check us out. And we're taking tours all the time, showing people what we do and who we are. It's a hard concept to understand unless you walk through the door and you see bustling, busy people that are You just have to see it to understand. So we would invite anyone to come by. You don't need to have an invitation or you don't need to have a time slot. Just stop or call us, get on the website. Yeah, check us out, please.
Okay. Thank you. That is Summit County Clubhouse staff member Phyllis Sharples. Appreciate the call. Bye now.
Thank you, Carolyn. Hope to see you. Bye-bye.
Good morning. It's 8:29. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, Park City Council member Steve Joyce is on the line with us with an update on the city council meeting last night. Good morning, Steve. Thanks for joining.
Good morning.
Yeah, so there were several bold events happening last night, it seems like, in our council meeting. Let's start off with the governor's decision to grant Summit County's exception, asking that masks be required in public places and for events. We heard a lot of residents over the last several weeks talking about masks and asking council to take a stand on this. And of course, it does involve the governor and having authority from that perspective. Tell us a little bit about what this directive means.
Yeah, at the simplest level, it means, it's anytime anybody in Summit County is going into a business, anywhere that's a public indoor space, you'll need to wear a mask. There's, some obvious exceptions that you would think of, like, if you go to the dentist office or you're in a restaurant eating food, you can't do that through a mask. But other than that, it's pretty much masks everywhere's indoors all the time. And this has just proven to be the most effective way to cut down the virus spread, especially the kind of the big one with coronavirus is the asymptomatic spread, where people don't even know they have it and they're walking around spreading the disease.
Right. And it's been determined that it's probably more likely spread through airborne droplets and that type of thing rather than even surfaces at this point.
Yeah, that's been a big change as they've learned more. But and I've just got to give a big shout out to both the County Health Department and the Summit County Council. They just, it's a big step. It's such a balancing act between the big lockdown that we did back, 14th, 15th, and where we just, it's catastrophic for the economy. And now we're really starting to see case numbers start to rise. The trends aren't looking good. So to me, this was a great effort to go to the governor and ask for an exemption and to really try to protect the progress that Summit County made. I mean, it's cost us a lot, and we want to keep our businesses open, and we want to keep people moving around town and enjoying the things we have to offer. And this seemed like the most effective way to do it. So I really appreciate their hard work.
Yeah, and last night Tim Haney mentioned that, Sunday, many hundreds of masks were handed out for the Car Free Sunday event that we have in place now for the rest of the summer. What are you expecting, if anything, in terms of pushback on this ordinance that will be put in place?
I've been so proud of Summit County so far, and not just the people who live here, but the visitors here. It's, people, if the locals are doing, I'll call it the right thing, if the locals are doing the things to stay healthy and stay protected, and that's the social distancing and the hand washing and the masks, then people who are visiting here tend to kind of trend to follow the lead. And I'm hoping that's what we get. When you look at some places around the country, it's been, quite frankly, kind of a disaster. People would, you'd swear to God there's something in the Constitution that specifically says, I don't have to wear a mask. I've just never quite understood it. It's like we don't hesitate if a restaurant says you have to wear, no shirt, no shoes, no service, or you got to wear a seatbelt. It's like, we'll do that because it's the right thing to do. And with this virus, wearing masks is the right thing to do. And I really hope we don't get a lot of pushback. I hope everyone kind of gets with a program. And I anticipate that. I've just been really pleased with what's happened in Summit County so far.
Yeah. Okay. And another very vocal issue that many members of the council have received comments from residents on is hosting big events, especially the big events that draw thousands of people at a time, things like the Triple Crown, the Park City Soccer Club tournament, and the Ski Town Lacrosse tournament, 4th of July parade. All of those events were canceled, and that was done in a decision last night. I guess there's still some kind of technicalities that have to be worked out, but can you talk a little bit about that?
Let me be careful with that. Yeah, let me correct one thing. I think people misunderstood what they saw last night. Is we did not cancel those events. We did cancel the 4th of July because that is our event, and we absolutely have the right to decide not to do it. So just to be clear, no parade, no fireworks, no 5K run, although there's kind of a virtual 5K that they're still doing. But the no city park, no volleyball tournament. So we have complete control of those because they're ours. For other events, the state law is that we can't exceed the limitations that are put in place by the governor unless we get his exemption, just like we did with masks. And we do not have the right to just arbitrarily decide to cancel right now. That would not be legal without going back to the governor and asking for a special exemption, and I can't imagine we would get that. What we do have the right to do is to decide that the impacts of events are either properly mitigated or not. And you can have traffic mitigation, health mitigation, those kinds of things. And what council decided last night was that we did not believe for these big events that there was any way that they could demonstrate that they were mitigating the health risks. Now, they have the opportunity to come back and say, well, here's this extra set of things we're going to do, and how about that? Does that meet that criteria? And I don't know whether they'll do that. Jenny Dearson and Jonathan Weidenheimer will continue to work with the people who are, you know, the Extreme Soccer and the Triple Crown and those folks. But just to be clear, the council does not have the right to out-and-out cancel events.
Okay, so what happens next then? Because it was pretty overwhelming. The council indicated that they do not think that there's a safe way to hold these types of events. So now what happens?
Yeah, so the next step, and that's what I think we heard from Jonathan last night, was, they basically, our special events team has to go back and work with the folks that are in charge of these events. And I'm sure they've already talked between last night and this morning and explain, here's what council has said. Here's what it means from a mitigation standpoint. Where do you want to go from here? Do you want to try to increase mitigation and come back and somehow convince council that you really can run a safe event? Or you just, go, okay, we understand we won't be running that event in Park City this year. And it's really tough for us. I mean, you look at things like Triple Crown and the Extreme Soccer and stuff. I mean, these are people who've been doing this here in Park City for years. They, it's an important part of our community. Some of these things generate like money for grants for people who can't afford to play sports. It's tough to say, no, we just don't see how this can happen this year. And quite frankly, if we hadn't seen this big surge throughout Utah and its surrounding states in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I think we would have been okay doing this. It would have still required a lot of mitigation and had a lot of concern, but I think we could have gone ahead with it. But boy, with the numbers we're seeing, I mean, they're getting worse here in Summit County, and the surrounding areas and states are just going through the roof.
So can you, in a nutshell, then clarify what it is those event coordinators would have to do to accommodate any of the mitigation requirements?
I honestly can't. And I think that's part of the challenge. I think the message back from City Council was, we can't see how you could successfully mitigate these impacts given the circumstances. And so it's really not up to us to go to them. And if there was something obvious that we could have done that said, look, if you'll do X and Y, then we'll be happy. But we literally couldn't see those options. And so it's really up to them to either decide they can't hold the event or to come back to us with proposals and convince us that, in fact, that is adequate mitigation. And I just, you know, I don't know that there is such a thing given the current circumstance. And for what it's worth, they did a really good job of having plans in place to spread fields, spread people, reduce the number of fans to, you know, they were doing a lot of things, but most of that was around the control that they really had during the event itself. And I think a lot of the concern from council was, you know, this group of people comes in waves and they're intermixing a lot and they turn around and they're in hotels and restaurants and, you know, doing our tourist events and all these kinds of things. And it's just, it's hard to put constraints around all of that. But that's, you know, it was basically it would be very consciously drawing a lot of people from surrounding states at a time where those surrounding states have very high infection and transmission rates.
Oh, yeah. Things are spiking pretty badly in Nevada, in Idaho, in Arizona,
Wyoming,
California,
Montana, Arizona. Yeah. Yep. But Colorado. Everywhere around us but Colorado. Sure. They're actually kind of kicking our butts right now.
Yeah.
They're doing really well.
Yeah, we're always competing, aren't we? I guess we should get that put together. Hey, so, but just quickly, one more thing on this. We're looking at some deadlines because I don't have the calendar in front of me, but when were these events due to begin?
Soon. I'll pull it up. I think the first thing we would see, obviously, would be Park City Municipal doing the 4th of July or not. But the next one would be the Triple Crown, which started July 13th.
Okay.
Extreme Soccer was the 23rd, and then the Ski Town Lacrosse was August 8th.
Okay, so we've got a little bit of time for these organizations to make their decisions. Let's quickly go back to July 4th. There is going to be a virtual 5K run, which is to raise money for the Park City Ski and Snowboard Team, but no fireworks, no parade.
No fireworks.
No volleyball tournament in the park.
No other activities in the park. So okay. none of the traditional, you know, music and, you know, okay. booths and things like that in the park.
Okay. And then, of course, Main Street, the decision was made to make both Saturday and Sunday for the July 4th weekend car free.
Yep, absolutely. And okay. we've got good support from the Main Street Alliance, the Historic Park City Alliance.
Okay, let's move on to the vote taken on the Huntsman property subdivision in Deer Valley. That was a vote 2-2. One of the council members, Max Doelny, was not at this particular meeting. So the mayor broke the tie. This was an interesting, bold move that has to do with house sizes. Can you talk a little bit about that whole decision and how that came about?
This is going to be one of the few times that I'm not sure I can explain things well. Council has had a concern ongoing that I would say best relates to some of our energy conservation things, our net zero goals, about, you know, some of these just huge, huge, huge houses that are, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 square feet that are getting built. And a lot of them are second homes and they're occupied, you know, 2 weeks a year kind of thing. And there's been discussion of, are there things that we can do to limit total house size? In fact, you see that in places in Colorado where local municipalities have a lot more flexibility of their zoning and codes. But here in Utah, it's kind of tough. But we've talked about that over and over. This one's kind of unusual in that the Huntsman property up there is part of the Deer Valley Master Plan. And the Deer Valley Master Plan specifically has a line in it that says you cannot limit house sizes. And so we got to a vote at the end to approve it, and there was discussion about should we be talking about limiting house sizes, and two of us said, no, it's not appropriate, and no, you can't, and two said, sure, why not, and then Andy sided with the sure, why not. So they're going to come back to us with something by our July 9th meeting, to give us more information, but quite frankly, I'm not even sure what that'll be.
So more information, you mean with respect to what would be legally permissible?
I think that's got to be it. But I think it's, you know, when you have an agreed to MPD, I'm not sure how you change that. So to me, it was pretty cut and dry. But basically, to some of the other councillors and to the mayor, it wasn't. So I'm not sure what they're looking for. There was already quite a bit of information about visualization. That's one of the things, is how visual is the neighborhood when you go from certain, there's certain defined points around that you know, what do you see from here? How obvious is it going to be up on the hillside? And they provided all of that to the Planning Commission, and it was in our package. And I think that was pretty adequate. And the answer is, you really can't see that Huntsman property from hardly anywhere in town. It's kind of tucked up on the hillside between Marsac and Royal Street. You know, most people don't know there's a 20,000 plus square foot house sitting up there, and they don't even know it's there. So I don't think it's terribly visible. So I'm not sure where that's going to go, but it'll be back to us July 9th.
Okay. And that that 20,000 square foot home was the original Huntsman home that sat on that 40 acres.
And yeah, and it's going to stay at least for the foreseeable future. Jeanette's not part of it. It's literally one of the lots in the neighborhood. But there's no expectation that it becomes a neighborhood of 20,000 square foot houses.
Sure, sure. Okay, yeah, and how about briefly just an update on the rooftop solar item that was on the agenda?
Yeah, this is one that it's kind of almost a policy question, really, that we're starting to come to, which is, a number of years ago, part of the net zero goals, the city council decided that what we wanted to do was, for every new building that we either built or modified, we wanted to do that work as net zero in the building level. So that's where you start seeing like a lot of solar panels up on roofs, and a lot more controls in the building to make them, you know, better climate controls and lighting controls and things like that. But one of the things that's changed here in the last little bit is that, congratulations to Luke. He's doing a phenomenal job. But we're basically taking all of the city's municipal electricity and moving that to solar over the next 2 years. And so several of us were questioning whether, you know, is putting solar on every single roof the right thing to do when we're going to be getting solar energy anyway? Can we better spend that money, that same amount of money, to further our net zero goals in a more effective way? And I don't know where we're going to end up on that, but I think it's a conversation we need to have. I think it would be a, you know, kind of a slight policy shift away from every building is its own net zero little entity, and more of a, let's look at the whole picture across our municipality and all our things and services, and try to be as effective as we possibly can.
Sure. And that's that price tag is about, what, $250,000 to put those?
Yeah, there's two buildings as part of this, and they were, yeah, I think between the two of them, it was, yeah, $259,000. So it's big money. It's you know, the question is, we want to do the thing with it.
Right. And waiting, of course, for the solar farm to come online is part of that calculation.
Yeah, it's one thing when you say I'm going to replace coal fire with solar, but it seems less impactful when you say I'm going to replace utility grade solar, which is cheaper, with local solar, which is more expensive, but has some other positive attributes. But it seems like the bang for the buck isn't nearly as big as it was a couple of years ago. And I just think we ought to, you know, the numbers, the dollar costs are high enough where, you know, we ought to take the time and make sure we're really doing the most effective things to get to our net zero goals.
Okay. What else? Anything else that you want to add to this update?
Yeah. Can I just an invite to people, especially for those who have older houses? If you have a house that has, you know, the older pipes, the metal pipes in it for your water delivery, one of the things we've been doing is trying to expand our water testing for copper and lead that could show up in your house water. So if you're interested, you can be a free part of this testing and find out, do you have any use with your house and your plumbing? You know, if you've got the plastic, you know, kind of PVC piping or tubing and stuff, you can't be a part of it. But if you're interested in this, if you just go to the parkcity.org website and up in the search bar type water quality, that'll take you to our water quality page. And down, probably two-thirds of the way down, you'll see something that says looking for volunteers. And you can just fill out a form. And we're looking for about 30 more households that we can include in the testing we've been doing over the past couple of years. But this is how we make sure you're drinking safe water, not only from what we deliver, but what you actually get out of your house tap. So that would be helpful if people are interested.
Okay, parkcity.org. All right, thank you.
Yeah, just in water quality. Put it in the search box.
Water quality. Okay, thank you so much. That's Steve Joyce, council member from the Park City Council. Thanks. Yes, good morning. It's 8:50. Next up, I have Wasatch County resident Elizabeth Hokanson. She is seeking election to the Heber South seat on the Wasatch County Council. And Hokanson is facing off against incumbent Kendall Crittenden in the Republican primary. Mail-in ballots are due Tuesday. And Crittenden joined us yesterday, and you can hear that interview on our website. And joining us now is Elizabeth Hokanson. Good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate this opportunity.
So, Elizabeth, although you are not the incumbent in this race, you're also not a political newcomer, serving previously on the Heber City Council and other boards. So what successes can you tell us about during your time in public service?
Yeah. When I was on City Council, we had the real estate crash of 2008, and we had to get through a really tough economy. We brought red ledges into Heber City, which is a really big, wonderful development, and I was part of bringing Walmart in, which, of course, was controversial at the time, but that has brought an enormous tax base to us and avoided a lot of problems with some potential other places that Walmart was thinking of bringing. I was also on a variety of boards like the sewer board, the power board, the health board, and so forth. So I think one of the things that I bring to this seat is that experience. I have found that the city and county are consistently adversarial, have been over the years, were at the time that I was on the city council. So one of my goals is to represent the district that I come from and to work closely with the city, the mayor, the city council, to represent us to the county and hopefully foster more positive relationships and a more working relationship. So those are some of the things that I bring to the table for this office.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about your work on the health board. There are some pretty unique situations occurring right now around the world with respect to COVID-19. Cases do continue to grow in the state, and the health department recently announced the third death in Wasatch County due to the disease. How would you address the issue in Wasatch County?
Well, first of all, let me say that This is a very, very important issue that I'm not sure enough people are taking seriously. I have two daughters who are in the healthcare field, frontline. They're CNAs. I also have a high-risk daughter, and my husband's high-risk, and my parents. So this is a big concern to me. I think that I would like to see more education out there about what's going on, because I've seen an alarming amount of people not take it seriously and say things like, oh, it's overreported and we shouldn't have to wear masks in public and so forth. I'd like to get more education out there about the possibilities of what this virus means and what it can do. For instance, any high-risk people, for instance, the young people, there's been a new wave where people are concerned that young people are running around symptom-free, but passing this and spreading this to more high-risk communities and people. That's a really big concern. People have assumed that the young people are immune, that it's not a big deal. But as carriers, that is a big deal. We need to be able to educate the people. We need to make sure that the citizens are wearing masks wherever they go. There's a controversy on whether they should be mandatory or not. I am not one to make anybody do anything that they don't want to do, but I would like to enforce, you know, that if they're going in a public place, they must wear a mask. Fine if they're on their own, private, walking the dog, okay, that's fine. That's their choice. But if they don't wear a mask, they will be invited to leave the public where they are, like the store, public park, anywhere that they might interact with the public. They should be wearing a mask or asked to leave.
So, Elizabeth, let me just inject here that Summit County just received verbal authorization from the governor's office to make masks mandatory here in Summit County. Would you support an initiative like that from a Wasatch County Council, asking the governor to do something like that there?
You know, I hesitate to do that because a lot of people in this community are concerned about being forced to do something like that. And I just heard that as well, and I don't know the details yet of what that means. So, for instance, I'm great with that mandatory masks to be worn in public. But what does that mean in public? Like I said, walking the dogs, anywhere anybody is seen. So I'd be open to it, but I need to learn the details. Like I said, it was just passed, and I'm not familiar with exactly what that means. We want to be careful with people's freedoms, of course, but we really need to err on the side of understanding how important this situation is. And people have not been really, well, a lot of people, many people I know, have not been as concerned as they should be or informed as they should be. So I'd be open to it, but I need to look at the restrictions a little bit further. This has happened so quickly.
Sure. And you feel that education is something that's lacking right now in terms of helping people understand just how serious of an illness? Is that what?
I do, because I'm not seeing a lot of what I've had to do is do a lot of research to understand how important this is, and it hasn't been really that forthcoming in my direction. I've had to go seek it. So, for instance, when recently I had heard, there were no deaths in Summit County, for instance, where my daughter works, and I thought, isn't that great? They're taking care of it. They're doing such a good job. A little more research by talking to my daughter, in fact, I was able to find out that the deaths are low in Summit County because if somebody gets very sick with it, they send them to Salt Lake. So they aren't dying in Park City. And so that makes people, if they look at that statistic and they go online and look at the coronavirus on the government's website, they are seeing very few deaths in our area and in Summit County, but that's not the full picture. Like I said, those people who are really seriously ill are being sent to Salt Lake to wait out their fate and see what happens there. So the statistics can be a little bit misleading. It's quite a bit more serious than people know. And as I said, I've had to do a lot of research and go out to get the information myself rather than it just circulating in sources that, like social media and so forth, that are a little bit more accessible to people.
So we just have a couple of seconds here, but what do you bring to the table that your opponent does not? Quickly, in just a minute.
The relationship between Heber City and the county, one, and two, I plan to reach out to the citizens and get their feedback on important issues, which hasn't been happening, like the power poles that went up, people didn't know. It's not enough to just say it was, you know, to have it on an agenda. We need to reach out to the public, get their input, let them have a voice in important issues that are being made. So that's one of the, those are the two most important things. Also, density, I'm concerned about density. It has been proven at a much higher rate in the county than in the city, and that should be, that should not be the case. City should be where development happens. So some of my positions and public outreach will be some of the main differences between the two of us.
We are going to have to leave it there. Thank you. That is Elizabeth Hokanson. She is running for the Wasatch County Council seat, Heber South seat in Wasatch County against Kendall Crittenden. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It's 9 o'clock, and we're going to take you back to NPR. Thank you for joining us this morning. Have a great Friday.